Always record episode 129.
Howdy ho, neighbor.
Hi.
Get my headphones here. The video turned out really well.
Oh my god, thank you. Appreciate that.
Yeah, I'm excited. I like the way I was assuming that what was going to happen, and I like this so much better. I thought that you were just going to do it all, just a straight video edited of what the event was. This, like, analyzing the show is so much cooler. Step by step, you know?
Shit, I'm sorry. I just thought I was muted. Yeah, you mean, like, to break it in pieces for each question?
Well, for you to analyze the show itself. Like, I didn't realize that was what was happening. I thought we were just going to show the show, the Radio 8 Ball show, like has happened in the past. I love this, like, looking at the deeper significance of, you know, and it's as soon as he said Israel at the time, what Israel, I was like, is he overtly doing, and he must have.
He must have, right?
When he said Israel, yeah, he was going.
Because he even pronounces it kind of, he doesn't say like.
He does, he kind of puts it together, it's kind of a Darren Brown kind of thing. You know?
Yeah, totally. Which I'm fine, like, I feel like it was, I don't think it was like a mind, you know, like Darren Brown like that, but yeah, it's totally like he's being a joker, you know, he's like, all right, let's see what we can get out of this, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Let's see what this stirs up in your brain or in the moment. You know, I think that's actually pretty awesome.
It's totally awesome.
I'm glad you got, like, so it's analyzed, like, I didn't realize this till I started doing it. And then, by accident, took it a step further, but it's like, so you have the song. The song is in response to the question. Then Andras and Peter, like, talk about the answer. Then I come in, and I talk about it, but now, like, them having talked about it becomes part of the answer, too. So I'm talking about them talking about it. And then, because I'm a fucking idiot and don't speak the language of music, I get that shit all wrong, and then I have to come in, and now I'm commenting on the commenting of the commenting on the song.
Mm.
And I kind of really like that.
Yeah, it's kind of neat. And
I
like
mean,
that's,
I couldn't have planned that, but yeah.
No, you couldn't. Like, that makes it so much better. Hey, John.
Hi.
Hi.
So, yeah, sorry I'm late, but I'm here.
Whatever.
Sybil had to cancel, I guess.
Can't be helped.
To be quite honest, there's a part of me that's relieved in the sense, from a totally selfish standpoint, is I wanted to talk, I wanted to tell a story, I want to hear something David has to say, and I was like, oh, if we have a guest on, is it going to be really rude to, like, you know, talk about our personal things? If you're there, it's the one time you get to speak to them, right?
Well, I was excited to talk to her specifically. Other than, like, if it was her or Pearl or something, you know, because, like, you know, it's weird to communicate this stuff, and or I've been so broken up, you know, but, like, totally fucking tragic, horrific event at my work, unfucking believable, you know, and, like, there's no fucking crisis actors there. I can say that for 100% certain, you know. Those are very close friends of mine. And so we have all these things happening. It's like every time that there's an event.
David, I just want to back you up because you're sort of going right into this without context. So people in, like, the Kitchen Sink Facebook group might have the context. But if this is something that's going to go public, do you want to just even give the short version of what you're talking about?
Yeah, I think I'll be okay. I most times that I've been talking about it, I've just been going into tears, so it's weird to, you know, try and do the radio show thing and
yeah,
be so emotional.
I don't want to put this is not to sensationalize something.
No.
And if you're not comfortable, so like
no,
but it's fucking real. That's just
no,
it.
Well,
it's fucking
this
real.
Is,
this is
well,
what's
there's
happening.
There's multiple sides to it because, like, I could see what the media was trying to do, and I, I talked to the people who were the head of the facility about what their experience was with when NBC called, and they already had their narrative in place that they wanted to give. And so basically I have a very close friend who I'd see almost every day. I go to work. Her name's Laura, she has a daughter named Maddie, who's 8 years old. And I would see Maddie all the time, and she was basically the leader of the girls down there. She's the oldest, and so they'd always follow her around, and it was really cute. They'd be like, "What are we doing next, Maddie?" It was like this whole thing, you know. I was very impacted by this little girl before this ever happened. She was just a very interesting, strange, special person, you know. And basically, apparently, this kid who also lives there, who's friends with her, who I'd see around playing with his yo-yo all the time, he lured her into his apartment and he raped her and he strangled her to death. And then he carried her down the stairs and put her into a dumpster. And so that happened. And so the community down there is really shook. So it's an arts community, and there's people that live there. It's like a compound situation. And then my work is in front of it and connected to it. And so I do G. Clay prints for local artists, and many of them live there. And so, I found out from a text from a woman I'm seeing, and she didn't know that I knew the little girl. She just said somebody was found here, and I kind of lost it. I couldn't fucking believe it. And then I went down there the next day, and I got to spend the day with Laura, which was really a good thing to do. And I gave her a pair of socks I'd been meaning to give to her since her birthday that had pugs on them, because her and Maddie's first dog was a chug, I guess they call it, or something like that. It's like part pug, part chihuahua or something. I don't know. But anyways, whatever. It's this whole thing. So, it's a trip to see victims so close to home, and then to see the way that they tried to. So originally the press wanted to make this about the homeless thing when she was just missing. They were like, oh, the vagrants and all this shit, because they have their thing in place, you know. And then when it turned out that it was this kid, it turned out that the kid is apparently doesn't have papers, and his mother doesn't have papers, so they're illegal, so they're making it into an illegal alien issue. So it's like, fill in whatever the thing is. You know what I mean? It's like they have all these different things, and they're like, how do we wire this in to right. this?
Do you want to villainize the homeless? Do you want to villainize immigrants?
What?
Who gets to be the bad guy? Yeah, exactly.
Everything but the reality of the issue.
Which is that a tragedy happened and a young girl is dead.
Right, and that where does the mental illness come from? And so that was Laura's whole thing. Like, Laura took out, a book of the saints, and it was the patron saint of mental illness. And she was like, this is who I'm praying to for this boy, you know, who killed my daughter. And so, like, she recognizes that it's a mental illness issue that stems from our whole culture. And that's, like, her immediate response. Not just our, but, like, you know what I mean? Just like the
ultimate,
like everything. And like,
can I ask you a somewhat personal question? So when you say that, what that's brought to mind is like this Charleston shooter, how like the families came out and essentially publicly forgave the guy.
Yeah.
You know, is it like a similar sort of like obviously devastated, but it seems like heroic in a lot of ways to be so understanding to say, it's not this kid. There's like an underlying issue of why the fuck would people do this?
Right. And so Reggie came up, the mother of the boy, to the memorial, and she was like, you know, just wailing. And she's like, my boy is a bad, bad boy and all this stuff, you know. And Laura heard the commotion and she came out, and she just basically embraced the mother of the boy who killed her daughter, and, you know, was like, you know, we both lost our children, and wow. You know,
how the fuck do you deal with that? That's crazy.
It's so, well, yeah. Laura's had a challenging life, you know, and so like, I mean, this is
That's just an unbelievable level of compassion, though. I can't even imagine.
Oh yeah, no, she's a really, really, really. She's you know, she's like in my top echelon of like favorite people. I just can't believe this happened to her and Maddie.
I'm not trying to be dramatic. Like, just trying to imagine that is making me like want to cry. Like, imagining the emotion of, like, you know, I think in a lot of ways the natural temptation would be, you want to lash out at the other, you know, like I'm, you know, maybe that's me. Maybe I'm just projecting myself into the scenario. But it's like, you know, how, you know, people are always going to blame the parents. Oh, something happens, and it's like, oh, what the, you know, how were they raised, or you know, all the stupid shit, or just like, just again, just to have someone to a face to blame, but to instead sympathize is incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, it's incredible. It's true. Yeah, I ended up, there was a guy, and I didn't understand what his deal was, if he was a reporter or what, but like he had a clipboard. Actually, I don't even want to fucking say this. I'm not going to say what he said.
Yeah, don't say it.
I can, but he came up and he asked something, and somebody told me what he had asked, and I assure you it wasn't an appropriate thing. And so I walked up to the guy and I just looked at him right in the eyes and I was like, fuck off. And he wasn't moving. He was just fucking sitting there. And then Laura came up and was like, there's a bunch of people here that are ready to beat the shit out of you right now if you don't go, you know. But it was like this whole, yeah, it was really interesting to see everybody, and people were coming from all over, you know, to give flowers, and people from San Jose, and people coming a distance, you know, and they didn't know her, and they didn't know the situation, and I thought it was really great, you know. But it's interesting. It was like an interesting study of like, wow, people, you know, they recognize the tragedy happened, and they want to, you know, console or offer something and respects, and I get it. It was really interesting to like be on the side of the thing where I'm like hearing things before the media has, and then seeing where the media is going before they even have the explanation of anything, and like that was very insightful for me, you know.
David, I have a number of things I want to say to you. Okay, first off, this is going to sound unrelated, but it's one long series of chain of events.
What else is new here?
Yeah. First off, I've been thinking for the last few weeks that I wanted to talk to you and essentially apologize to you and try and come to an understanding, in that I felt for, I don't know. All right, I'm just going to be blunt here. So I felt like in, I don't know, the last few months, it seemed to me like you, and this, it seemed to me like you were drifting more towards this, like the false flag narrative of, you know, there's an event and okay, it's a, you know, these are crisis actors, these are whatever. Uh-huh. And, you know, seemingly drifting towards a stance on something, which not that there's anything wrong with that, but rather than possibly or whatever, but that it seemed more and more that that was, you had a leaning. And I guess probably I also developed a bit of a leaning in the opposite direction, right? And I felt like something would come up and it was sort of our conversations came down to, very often spun into, you would say something, I'd say, ah, but you know, can't we see how it could be otherwise? And you know, it was kind of like, felt like we were repeating ourselves over and over again. And I realized there was not like a conflict, like, you know, like we're not friends, but like a, you know, like some sort of like butting of heads that seemed to come up again and again. And I just noticed our conversations becoming sort of cyclical in that way. And it made me analyze myself, you know, that I obviously had a sort of leaning towards these sort of stories or these interpretations of the stories, and at the same time seeming, viewing you as doing the opposite. And I was like, I just really want to talk to David and just sort of say, hey, I don't feel like we need to keep doing that, right? First off, we don't need to keep doing it, but secondly, it's none of my fucking business, where you're, whatever, we're just human beings, and we're gonna, there are gonna come points where we're one, at some point, leaning more towards something, and the future might be, it really doesn't fucking matter. Anyway, I just wanted to sort of, apologize and talk to you about it, and all these sorts of things that were, for me, it felt like, I really need to do this. I really need to have this conversation with David. And then I'm at work, and this series of fucked up things happens, right? I work in a hotel, I work in a restaurant inside a hotel. We just hired a new bartender, and his name is Tony. And
hello, Mrs. Torrance.
Well, so someone's trying to do paperwork for him, and they're like, how come I can't find you in the system? I can't find you in the computer. And he says, oh, because my real name is Daniel. Tony's my nickname. And I just stop and go, wait a second. Did you just say your real name is Danny, but everyone calls you Tony? And he's like, yeah. And and you're in a fucking, and he's like, I know. And he was just like, he's like, oh man, that's fucking creepy. Yeah. I get what you're saying. And, and then
what, he never thought about it.
I guess he never, and then he does the little Mrs. Torrance, whatever. Right. And, so now, and again, he's a fucking bartender. So he's Lloyd, Danny Lloyd.
Oh,
right?
No,
right? And all these
Lloyd
things.
Is the name of the bartender. And then, oh God.
Right. So I'm
Lloyd,
like, what?
Lloyd
the...
is the name of the bartender. Oh God.
So what the fuck? Right. So anyway, I'm just like, okay, that's a funny, that's, at the moment, it's funny. Okay, that's kind of weird. Douglas Bowles from 40 Minutes, he always jokes to me telling me that I work at the Overlook, right? Because I work in a hotel. So he's like, he goes, oh, I think it's so funny that you work at the Overlook. Mm-hmm. Then I'm working with Danny, Tony, Boyd the bartender. I'm like, this is too fucking
bizarre. At a hotel. It's a bar.
A hotel bar. Yeah, it's the hotel bar.
Dude, you gotta be kidding me.
So now, I just think it's an interesting and mildly funny synchronicity. There's no seriousness yet, right? Mm-hmm. About an hour later, I'm stepping outside for a cigarette, and I pass this woman who's one of the housekeepers there, okay? And, she's like, hey, she's a really, really nice lady. And she's like, hey, can you do me a favor? She's like, I really don't want to keep telling this story. Can you just let everyone know what happened? And I said, yeah, what happened, babe? And she said, my daughter died today. And I was like, what? And so, how old is your daughter? And her daughter was 5 years old. And she's telling me this story how her daughter was at the playground playing. So while this woman's at work, she's at the hotel. Her daughter, someone else takes her daughter to the playground. And while they're there, this young boy kicks the girl in the head. And she falls, smacks her head. So now she gets kicked in the head, falls and smacks her head on the ground, and she's dead.
Oh, my God.
And, And I'm kind of staring at this woman in disbelief because the way she's talking to me is so, there's no emotion in her voice.
Oh, because it's shocking.
Well,
it's shocking.
Right. So like,
they don't, it doesn't,
she's
they take
telling
a while.
Me, right. She's telling me this story. Like she'd be telling me and then I took my laundry out. It was just there was just zero emotion. There was zero anything. It was just yeah, so this happened, yeah, and and I'm like, are you okay? Yeah, I'm okay, I'm just, and I'm watching, and I'm looking at this woman's face, and as I said, I've been thinking about you and the crisis actor thing, and I think, And now suddenly my, there's something kicks into me and I go, you know, I'm thinking with the crisis actor stuff. And when people say, oh, look at the parents, they don't even seem upset, or, you know, why is, if your kid child was just died, why would you be on the news telling this story without crying, or they don't seem to be showing emotion if this really happened?
There are examples where it's ridiculous, like not just they're not showing emotion, but that they're like, you know, it's just, you know, I'm sure you've seen.
What I'm saying is here, so I'm in a scenario where I know this is a real life scenario. And obviously, yes, the woman is in shock. And I'm thinking, I can't imagine that I would, if I can't, again, I can't even fucking begin to imagine what it would be like to have your 5-year-old daughter die, or your 8-year-old daughter murdered. You know, like, and again, I didn't realize it was a young boy had killed this girl in your case, and it's the same young boy, you know, not as malicious, let's say, but you know what I'm saying? The synchronicity is pretty intense. So anyway, I'm sitting there going like, you know, when people say, I'm like looking at this woman's face, and that was the first thing my mind, not the first thing, but like one of the first things my mind sort of went to was like, she's obviously in shock. Because I'm like looking at her in disbelief, like, are you really telling me the story like this? You know, like, and, anyway, I didn't say that, I'm thinking that, and And so I said, so my mind went there of like this, when someone says, oh, the parent's not showing enough emotion or whatever, man, you don't fucking know how you're going to act. And you don't know what, I don't think any of us could imagine how we would act in that situation.
No, and it's the years that followed too. It's like when my mom's father shot himself, you know, it wasn't right away that she had the breakdown. I mean, it was like. Didn't make sense, you know, and then it became that, you know, and then there was a process, and there's stages of grief, and shock is like the first stage, right? Absolutely. Which is denial. It doesn't compute, because you're so used to this being the reality that to just switch it is like this huge process, because it just doesn't make sense, you know.
So I'm thinking I want to go home and I want to tell David about this, right?
Yeah.
And I go home and you put something on Facebook about your situation. It's the same day.
Mm-hmm.
And...
What is it? Beltov or whatever? This was the day of the destruction of the... temple in Judaism. Mm-hmm. So it's like the biggest day of mourning for Jews happened to be the day that this happened. It's also the day that they did the exhibit finally for the statue of Baphomet, which I found interesting. Mm-hmm. that they chose that day. But yeah, it's a significant day for all this stuff.
Oh, it's the construction of the third temple.
Right. And so then to have it be Baphomet is really interesting. And then not to mention that we're in the middle of the dog days, and this was what my post in Kitchen Sink was, because this was what Laura was saying to me, and I was all right there. It's like Maddie's whole deal was that she was a wolf, and I didn't even like it was her totem animal, it was her spirit animal, and she would howl like she was this howling little girl, you know. She was a trip, but that was her whole thing, and so. For this, like, it was like 7:25, I believe. And, fuck. I mean, I don't know what day was. Was 7:23 a Friday? I can't remember. Maybe that was 24. But basically, I saw her very shortly before this happened. And I was talking to Laura in my office. And Maddie ran in with her friends behind her. And you know, the kids were all following her. And so in front of Maddie, I said to Laura, I was like, she's the leader of the pack, right? I was like, she's the leader of the pack. Just like total, you know. And so she was in agreement and she was like, yep, totally. And then she ran out and and then that was that. But that was one of the first things that came to mind. I was like, oh, the leader of the pack But then there was this really strange thing that happened where I'm sitting at the art bar with Laura, and this woman comes in with this dog. It's like a Pomeranian or whatever. And she's like, I just wanted to talk to you. I guess right before this happened, she was riding her bike by the tannery, which she doesn't normally do. I mean, she doesn't normally stop at the tannery. So she's riding her bike, and she's decided to stop for some reason at the stairs. And Maddie came running up the stairs and asked to pet her dog. And she said, sure. And Maddie pet the dog. And then she's telling us a story about how much Maddie loved the dog. And then she happens to say what the dog's birthday is, because it's 2 weeks apart from her own birthday, just in the conversation, like it led there. And then Laura just realized that the birthday that she gave for the dog was the birthday of AJ, the boy who killed her daughter.
Oh, wow.
And she just said it. And like there was all these, and she's like oriented that way. I mean, Laura's just a very open person to the cosmos and whatever, you know. A lot of our time hanging out is discussing with her my synchronicity stuff, you know, and this and this and this, you know. And so she, you know, I looked at it and I had this huge insight. And I know a lot of people don't take The Birth of Tragedy that seriously as far as Nietzsche's works are concerned, but like the weight of the idea of Dionysus and Apollo in relationship to specifically tragedy was just like, I had this huge revelation, you know, with that, with Laura, where I'm looking at it, I'm like, everybody here is gravitating towards the Apollonian stance, which is the physical, like there is a tragedy, like this would be, you know, sculpture. It's very solid, right? It's a very rigid view of the thing. And oh my God, what a tragedy. And then there's like also like the all the underlying things that are there that are like just fucking, you know, there's not the same type of order to them. It's like the whole thing is like there's a way to relate to it where it's malleable, and there's a way to relate like it like it's not malleable. And I could see that everyone, for the most part, people were gravitating towards the one, whereas like I think what Nietzsche was arguing is that you need a balance of allowing the tragedy to be malleable and relating to it in different ways with the recognition of the obvious facts. And so like that's what makes a healthy response to tragedy. And so like I could just see that that's what was taking place on a certain level. And when she's, you know, pointing out that the dog has the same birthday and people not knowing what to do with that, you know, it's like, wow, that's really weird. But like the symbolism was out of control, because it was just like dogs, dogs, dogs for days. Serious, 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 you know.
And it's funny you mentioned like the two pairing, because for me, having just met Danny, Tony, Lloyd, the bartender, all of that, then to have the woman tell me about her daughter dying, this is in the hotel.
Right.
Right. They have the two dead girls in the hotel, and these two girls died, you know, your friend and my friend's daughter both dying on the same day. Mm. It's like it was overwhelming. And I couldn't, this doesn't make, I know this doesn't make sense. It's not my fault, you know, in like a literal way, but I can't help but feel terrible in that I sort of almost, when this woman's talking to me and I'm like, she's in such shock, almost wishing, I was always like, I wish David could experience this to know what, you know, that it's not, that there is real tragedy. Not that I doubt that you have experienced tragedy in your life. You understand. I'm just being completely bluntly honest with the emotions that I was going through. Right. So please don't take that the wrong way.
No. It's just a matter that like there's no amount that I could qualify to like communicate like what my actual stance is on.
Of course. And what I'm saying, it doesn't even matter. What I'm expressing to you, all that stuff is actually really doesn't matter. Like
Everything's fucking happening all at once.
Right.
And so what are you supposed to do with that? You, other than like weed through it and try to get an assessment of any given situation, which is like almost next to impossible.
It's impossible. Right. And it's like, when I come home and I'm like, so it's like, you know, after experiencing this thing that I was like, I wish David could have been, you know, like, I don't exactly even know how to fucking say it. And then to come home and see you with that story. And I was just like,
I couldn't say anything. I just like,
right.
There was nothing I could say to that. I had to process it all this time. Like, and that's why I said like with the Sybil thing. It's not that I'm, of course I want to talk to Sybil, but it's like I needed to talk to you.
Right. Well, this is applicable to Sybil's whole deal.
Of that's course. Why I'm like, yeah. No. Dude. No.
And I love her work, and I love Pearl's work, and that's the thing. It's like I can totally acknowledge that there's crazy manipulations going on. And like, I experienced this. I got very close friends, you know, and like, who just experienced this crazy fucking tragedy, you know? And then like, I'm still like, I don't know if I buy Sandy Hook. I'm not sure if anybody died, you know? And is that insensitive to this? No, they're completely unrelated. Completely unrelated. I mean, so the point is that tragedies are happening all the time. There are sociopaths, you know, those sociopaths are the product of whatever, you know, all kinds of different sides and variables and things and whatever, you know. But like, I don't put it past the powers that be to manipulate and tell big lies, you know.
So I'm not really one to be so particularly worried about, as you say, is it insensitive, but just out of total curiosity, if you came across an article that said, because what I thought was mind-blowing was in what you wrote on Facebook, one of the first, your main points of that thing, you're relating all this tragedy, and then you end on the note of, you know, there's no crisis actors here, I thought was, again, it was too perfect a sync that it hit me really fucking hard. Mm-hmm. After having just thought that, but I'm just curious. So if you came across an article that said, You said this story made national news, or made you know some sort of
They made it a point to make it not as big, and I could, and that was the big insight. That was one of the big things with in regards to media, because I could see immediately that if these people were opportunistic and wanted to make a bigger thing out of it, the door was wide open from NBC.
Right.
So MSNBC had contacted the guy in charge down there. He's a friend of mine. And they basically were, you know, they're making like a pitch, like, do you want to go here? Do you want to go here? And he didn't cooperate, which I really respect him for. And it was just this realization of like, how often do people not cooperate with that? Seems of like course, in most yeah. cases, they'd be like, oh, fuck yeah. You know, whatever.
Because they're not related, because they have no personal connection to the story, which is why. Right. So my question was going to be, if you saw an article saying, you know, Santa Cruz, Maddie murder hoax
mm-hmm.
website, what do you think your response to that would be? Like,
I wouldn't want Laura to see that. I would just find that fascinating. Like, I would want to read their angle and where they're coming from. I mean, people have already attacked my friend for stuff that's completely unrelated in her past, and she's fine, whatever. It's just, I had one friend tell me that he was looking at an article, and I know her history, you know, and she's a single mom, you know, and whatever. But like, this was planned by a kid, and it was just in a very brief window when she was taken. And so like, for that to, you know what I mean? Like, that has nothing to do with her past or how, you know, whatever. And she the truth of the matter is that she raised her daughter incredibly well. She had like a spirited, free child. Like, her child was truly free. Like, it's like, you know, she's just so open, you know, so bright. You know, it's like, that was good mothering. So like, people attacking her mothering thing, but it's like, that was offensive, you know, but I know the story better than the people who don't, you know, who aren't related that wrote this article. And so it's very insightful to consider all the different examples of people pointing out false flag, this and that, when if you actually were on the inside, you'd probably feel a lot differently, you know? But I still question things. I encourage people to question things, you know. I mean, it's impossible not to if you're oriented like we are, you know.
Well, precisely.
I mean, I was questioning. I'm like, what happened with this kid? Did he fucking get some kind of, you know, does he have people, you know, manipulating him to go and do that? Like, did that just come out of him? Was that some weird fucking programming shit? You know, like, I don't know. You know, I'm just saying, like, I could still go into conspiratorial sides to this, despite the fact that all I know is that my friend who's the victim, you know what I mean? That's real. You know, that's as real as you can possibly get. You know?
Oh my God, what is real? Right.
Right.
You guys got time for one more quick story?
Sure.
Yeah.
So, we talked about the Charleston shooting being, you know, at least connected to this and you know, we touched on that as far as the tragedy and people sort of forgiving and the question of a hoax or a mind-controlled victim or all these sorts of things, right?
Mm-hmm.
Here we are on fucking August 9th, helter fucking skelter, race war. Did you see a rapper from the rap group Helta Skelta died yesterday?
What?
Yeah.
Yesterday, that was the first, wow, shit, weird, but what, how did he die?
I don't know.
Natural causes.
You know, the Illuminati took him out with, no, I don't know, I just thought that was a fucking fascinating synchronicity. So Charleston, right? So here we have, if you guys remember,
just to remind people, because I mean, people listen to this, they don't know. Charleston happened on the anniversary of Sharon Tate's death, and when we happened to do the Olympia.
No, Ferguson.
No, Ferguson. Stand reflected. I'm not thinking right now. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, which is today, right? Which is today. So literally 1 year ago today was the shooting of Michael Brown in Ferguson. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, that's weird. Darren Wilson is the guy who shot him. Darren Brown. Sorry.
Right.
Yeah. I almost slipped with the way I said it. I was like, oh no, that I know who that is. That's the mind control.
Wait a minute. He got Wilson. Wait a minute. Darren shot Brown.
Yeah, isn't that... I think I have that right. Michael Brown. I think the guy's name was Darren Wilson. Darren Wilson, yeah. Brown.
So you know why that's weird is because Darren Brown was the guy... I mean, not that this is what happened in Ferguson, just to be clear, but that that's... the guy who made, like,
I know that video. I know, that's what I'm saying.
Mind control. Not just that he does mind control, but specifically the assassin. So right. The episode of Darren Brown, that's the assassin, I recommend anybody fucking watch that, where he proves the Sirhan thing to the best of his ability, you know.
Right. My sort of Freudian slip there actually revealed a really interesting little thing there, because this is the guy who does, like, NLP, like, publicly NLP work. And, right, and I almost said the shooting of Darren Brown. I was combining the name of the guy who shot him and the victim to make something else. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. That's really fucking interesting. So, on August 9th, so 1 year ago today, Michael Brown gets shot in Ferguson. While, I haven't checked the times of it, but... Andras said it was while we were still on the tree walk.
Mm.
I haven't verified that. Let's see if it's 12 p.m. So yeah, 9 a.m. Be about 9 a.m. Pacific time. So yeah, so this is... anyway, here, see, what I was sort of weighing out is... This is on the anniversary, exactly, on the anniversary of the killing of Sharon Tate. We have Helter Skelter, race war. We have the shooting of Michael Brown happens on that anniversary. And then for the last year, this has really been a sort of like the topic of the last year, right? Mm-hmm. You know, these racially motivated killings, cop killings, things like that. So... So, what's the most recent really big story? And again, these are all controlled media. They pick and choose which ones are the big stories. But just saying, we have a year where year-long sort of narrative playing out, with the most recent one happening in Charleston. Well, last weekend, I went to a wedding in Charleston. Okay. Basically, it was like right after the shooting happened, my wife said, "Hey, my friend's getting married in Charleston. Do you want to go?" And this is as I had started working on the whole Synchronize, Always Sync Summit stuff. And I'm like wrestling with how do I deal with this helter skelter race war shit and Michael Brown? And how do I bring up these subjects and how do I deal with them sensitively and all this sort of stuff? And as I'm wrestling with this question, my wife's like, "Hey, do you want to go to Charleston?" And I'm like, "Yeah, we have to go.
Right.
Like, I
Because
have to
it's a
go."
thing, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, all right, I have to go. But bear in mind, just as a sort of one, sorry, one more aside, I actually drove through Ferguson on my way home. I was doing that whole road trip, and I didn't, since we were at the Sync Summit, I wasn't watching news stories or anything. And I went from Olympia and drove down the coast to your house, David, and then I'm driving back across the country, and I'm speaking to Doug on the phone, I remember, and he's like talking about Ferguson, and I was like, "Why does that sound so familiar?" And I was like, "Oh, I just saw that on the map. Yeah, I'm gonna be there in about 20 minutes, you know? I had to drive through there on my way home." So, anyway, okay, so where are we going? All right, so I go to Charleston. So last weekend, Charleston. Few things. One is get down there. We're late to the actual ceremony. Just by like 15 minutes, but it didn't matter because it was a very apparently very short ceremony. So we pull up to the church and everyone's coming out. And my wife's like, "Fuck, okay, we obviously missed that. Let's just go straight to the where the reception is, so we'll be on time for that." So I say, "Okay, where's the reception?" So I'm driving, and so she pulls out the wedding invitation. "Okay, we're gonna put it in the GPS. Where's the next thing?" And my wife's telling me her own little synchronicity. She goes, "Oh my God, I can't believe where the reception is." So,
But it's
basically,
there?
no, it's
Okay.
well, so, my wife apparently had spoken to this person and said, "Hey, I'm gonna be in Charleston." Or some girls who said she was just in Charleston and how beautiful it was. And my wife said, "Is there anything down there that I should see while I'm there?" And this girl says, "Oh, you know what you need to see? There's this one plantation that is just so gorgeous, and you could take a tour of the grounds. You walk around, it's so beautiful, and blah, 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 and you really need to see that." And my wife said, "I don't know how I'm going to take Alan to this plantation. I don't think he's going to do that." So she just expected that's not going to happen. She pulls out the invitation to put in the GPS. The wedding reception is at that plantation. So
No.
in the car, she expresses this, "Oh my God, we're actually going to this place, right?" So I'm a Yankee. I'm like, "Plantation? Is that what I think that is?" Right? Like,
Yeah.
I don't. That's like, so I'm like, "Are?" And I'm like asking her. I'm like, "Is?" And really, it's honestly, it's an ignorant question. But I'm like, "Is there such a thing as a plantation without slaves? Like, does plantation automatically equal?" Because it does in my mind, but I don't know if that's just. What, so whatever. I'm like, "Are we going to like a slave plantation for a wedding? Like, really?"
But it's not anymore.
Well, okay. So we go there, and there's like this gate, and you go in, and there's like a toll booth type thing there, and it says, "Park here. It's $10 to parking for tours and whatever." And I say to the guy, like, "Hey, I'm here for a wedding. Am I going to the same parking lot? What am I doing?" He's like, "Oh no, you go down here and blah blah blah, and then you'll get in this golf cart, and the golf cart will take you to the reception hall." And I'm like, "Oh, it's one of these kind of places? Like, what the fuck is this?" So we drive into this property, and it is legitimately gorgeous. It's legitimately gorgeous. Like nothing I've ever seen before. It's like what I would picture like the South to look like. These vines hanging from trees, and I don't know. It's fucking beautiful. But I'm also like, this looks like some overly rich white southern bullshit that I'm like immediately kind of nauseous about. And I'm again just being honest. Like, what the fuck? Why is this so fucking fancy place? So I have to drive this property, and then you get to the fucking parking lot, and then so now we're gonna wait for a fucking golf cart to take us, you know? And I'm like, what the fuck? So we're in the parking lot with like maybe 15 people. And this golf cart pulls up, and it's like an elongated golf cart with maybe like three or four rows of seats. And everyone's like hopping on. Myself and Melissa, as well as three like elderly people, or do not get on. The thing fills up, and it's the five of us left behind, right? And the main reason I'm not on there is because I'm not a jerk. I was trying to let the old people on because it was really fucking hot. It was crazy fucking hot. You're standing in the middle of a parking lot with no shade, and you had to wait for this fucking thing to show up to take you to the place. So everyone gets on, and I look at these like two pretty old ladies and this old guy, and I'm like, and I say to the golf cart, everyone in the golf cart, I say, I'm thinking, okay, this is the South, right? Like, Southern gentlemen's and I don't know, like husband, whatever, like all the fucking, you know, stereotypes of the South. So me being me, I just go, what gentleman here is gonna give up their seat for these two elderly ladies? And everyone looks at me and then averts their eyes, and the thing starts to pull away. And I go, wow. Kind of a cocksucker move.
You said that out loud?
Yeah, I said that very out loud. Right? And like, so I'm at this place for like, what, 5 fucking minutes? And I'm like, kind of a cocksucker move, huh? And this one guy turns around and gives me the finger and says, fuck you. And then the old man leans over me and says, what did you say? You know? And I was like, oh, just that I thought someone should have offered a seat to one of the two ladies that you're with, you know? Whatever. So,
Right, but that's it, dude. That's what you're dealing with. Yeah, that's crazy.
now we have to wait, and the fucking golf cart comes back about 10 minutes later, and now we all get on. And now we're driving through the property, and some other old lady, now a new old lady on the golf cart, says, as we're passing these like stone sort of shack things, said, were those the slave quarters? And no one answers her. So she says again, were those the slave quarters?
All right.
And some guy on the thing goes, yeah, they were, you know, whatever. But what I was more disgusted by, besides the fact that no one wanted to acknowledge that they were, I mean,
Right, right,
I don't know
right.
who knew.
It's bad enough that they fucking are, but yeah.
But no. But then I was saying was the way she asked was like, again, like completely detached, like as if you were on the tour of Universal Studios and you're like, is that where they filmed Jaws? It wasn't like, is that where people were enslaved and murdered and raped and forced? You know, it was just like, is that where the slave court? You know, I don't know. It was something, this tone that I was like, oh my God, get me the fuck out of this place now.
Right.
It's so not even disturbing at the same time.
So I'm like, oh, I don't know if I could fucking do this, right? And, you know, my wife's like, look, I just want to have a nice time at this wedding, you know? So of course we get there and we walk into the place, and the guy who turned around is like, fuck you. He like I almost like bump right into him. So we make eye contact, and I just went, nice, man. You know, like really sarcastic, like nice. And he's like, don't fucking call me a cocksucker ever again, you know? And I'm like, and then like Melissa grabs me and she's like, are you guys getting into a fucking fight here? Like, we just got here.
Right.
And I'm like, I wasn't trying to get to a fight. I'm trying to make a point that maybe someone should fucking offer a seat to an old lady. Like, what the fuck?
Right.
So now I'm all upset. Now I see him talking to these other, like, bros, and they're all, like, looking over at me. And I'm like, oh, my God. Like, am I going to get into a fucking fight at this wedding? Is this really what's about to fucking happen, isn't it?
Right.
And then I see, like, this dude's, like, you know, and my wife's just getting like, can we just have a nice fucking time? And I'm like, I don't know how to fucking do this right now, you know? Like,
super understandable from her point, too.
Of course. Look, I'm saying, I know myself. I'm kind of a dick.
They were being dicks in the first place, that's just the way things are.
How it is. Right. Yeah. It's just my personality to call someone a cocksucker within a minute of meeting them.
Right.
That does.
If they do something cocksucker, like they literally earned that title. They had to work for it. Yeah.
Right. But so it's all around. It's a bad mix, right? It's like.
Right.
But like, you know, then I see now I see like some like, you know, I don't know, could be like the mother of the bride or something talking to the guy, and they're looking over at me and pointing at me. And I imagine they're saying like, who is this person? Why the fuck are they here? I don't even know who the fuck these people are. And I'm like, what am I doing at this fucking place? Like, what the fuck am I doing here? Mm-hmm. Like, why am I in a fucking plantation with all you fucking rich white bitches that can't fucking, you know, even live up to your pretend fucking chivalry? Like, fuck you all.
Right.
And at so the same
time, where does the synchronicity come in?
So you're like, where's the sink? So, okay. So, right. Exactly. So I'm a dick. So whatever. So I, but then like something happens. And so as he's talking to like this woman that could like the mother of Brian, I'm like realizing like, you know, this is not, as much as I have strong feelings about all of this, it's not my fucking day. And you know what? I shouldn't be making any agitation at this fucking thing that's really somebody else's day. I'm just a fucking dude who doesn't even want to fucking be here. Let me just fucking, you know, eat my fucking meal and go home, you know, like. But then at some point, so they call us all to sit down. So like, we're sitting down and some guy sitting next to me decides he's going to start a conversation with me. And it's like some inane fucking wedding conversation that, you know, so what do you do for a living? Where are you from? You know, whatever. And I'm like, come on, man. We were going to do this? Like, this is just the mood I'm in. I'm like, really? So I say to him, okay, you're from this area, you know, I said, I'm only here for like the night and tomorrow morning. Is there anything I should see while I'm in Charleston? And he goes, well, I'm sure you heard that there was a shooting at a church about a month ago. He's like, it's kind of morbid, but a lot of people have, you know, kind of, it's become somewhat of a tourist destination. And I was like, what the fuck did you say?
Yeah.
Like,
it's true.
Right.
That's what happens. That's what's happening at the tannery where I work right now.
And I'm like, it's all over again. It's the woman in the cart going like, were those the slave quarters? It's like, oh, if you want, you could drive by this place where these people were murdered.
Right.
You know? And it's like, oh, someone's like, what the fuck did you say to me?
Right.
You know, like, and
that's, I'll let you finish, but it's funny this conversation went here because I was on a long drive today, and I finished this book by Eric Fromm called The Nature of Human Destructiveness or something. Anyway, the final chapters are on the necrophilic character, and he takes it out of its like sexual context and just says, hey, there's people out there that are just like preoccupied with death and almost see it as like, yeah, or ties it intimately to like consumer culture and kind of what we built.
I mean, we all do it. Like when you drive down the road and there's a car accident, don't you slow down and look?
Sure. Yeah,
that's a good thing, right?
Well, so, there's a different type of relationship to like, you're in this world, you're seeing what's happening around you. It's a coping thing too, to just mm-hmm. be aware of like what you're existing within, and like any recognition of the fragility of mortality is like, you know, something you might want to pay attention to, you know?
Well, as a I ended up having one conversation with my wife about it afterwards. I was saying, I actually used the car accident example, and I said, well, the distinction there is that, like, if I'm driving on the road and I see a fucked up car accident, what I immediately think is like, holy shit, that could have been me. So
right.
it's in one ways it's like self-empowering. It's like, oh, thank God that wasn't me, right? But it's also like the realization of like the reality is like it sort of in sparks like a responsibility. Like, oh my God, if I was just fucking, you know, not paying attention carefully, I could fucking kill someone in this car. I could fucking die in this car. I could, you know, it's like, you know, it's a realization that in a lot of ways can spark not only like a selfish, like better you than me, but also a level of responsibility, like a call to responsibility.
Sure. And empathy is a draw too.
Right.
I mean, people will empathize and a lot of the time it's genuine. Like I've seen it both. I've seen people that it seemed to be coming to the thing from kind of like this morbid kind of like fascination. And it's like, they're getting something out of it. There's a pleasure aspect. And then I've seen people who are truly just genuinely empathetic. They're affected by hearing about the experience and they want to offer their condolences. And it's as simple as that. And like, but it's, you can see that the distinction, you know, I mean, if you're paying attention, or at least I can't, I feel like I can, you know?
So, all right. So, so basically the guy says to me, you know, you could see this place where all these people got shot. And I say, man, I don't need to drive somewhere else to see a fucking murder site. We're sitting on one right fucking now.
You said that to him.
Yeah. I was like, we're sitting on the fucking blood of a fucking slave plantation. And you're telling me I could go to some other place to see some spectacle of, like, look around you. Like, what? You don't see that here?
What do you say to that?
And he's like, he's like, this building wasn't even there when there was slaves. This is a new build. I'm like, come on, you know what the fuck I'm talking about. You know, I was like, I'm not trying to spoil anyone's evening, right. You know, which I don't, you know, whatever. Like, okay, yeah, I get it. Everyone wants to be polite society and have their fucking, you know, dance to your fucking Bee Gees or whatever the fuck and have drink too much and look like an idiot and go the fuck home. I don't care. Have your fucking nice social night. But, yo, can we at least take a fucking minute to acknowledge where the fuck you are?
Right.
Like, you, and I said to, and this is what I said to him. I said, listen, I said, I'm not trying to spoil your evening. I said, but this is to me, and I tried to be like, again, I wasn't trying to be a dick, but say like, this is the challenge that I think our generation or whatever has, is that we have to somehow both acknowledge the history, the blood under our fucking feet, but of course we should be celebrating this wedding here, and perhaps we can transform this, like, you know, use the word alchemical process, but essentially, like, you know, can we elevate it, right? And I said, but you can't just dance on a graveyard without acknowledging that's where you are. What you can, if you, as long as you acknowledge it, then you can try and elevate it. But you have to fucking acknowledge it.
Yeah, to acknowledge it.
Right.
And then, yeah, totally. I feel the same way. I mean, that's, it seems like a lot of the work we're doing is just a recognition of what has been before being embedded in what's now. And that I think, like, culturally and socially, like, people have this whole thing where it's like, what's done is done. They don't see, like, even in their personal lives, like, you have experiences and then you move on or whatever. But the fact of the matter is that every experience you've ever had and how you've related to those experiences has literally shaped who you are on, like, a physical level, like, on every level, like, or it's influenced everything that makes up who you are. And the planet works the same way. And every continent works the same way. And every town, and you know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. It's like, we do these things happen, and then people are coming out of people, and there's no, like, there's no real, like, all the lines are all lines in the sand, and everything is extending and integrated into and a part of everything else. And you're standing there, like, that's a very significant story, because you're standing there at a place that has this intense history, but the history isn't just history. Like, history doesn't just, like, go away. Right. Like, we have this kind of, like, very linear view of time, and it's completely fucked. Because, like, first of all, even in the realm of time, like, that wasn't long ago. That was, like, recent. The buildings are still there, you know what I mean? It's like, maybe not this building, you know?
Right, exactly.
But, like, no, the Earth, but it's not even just that. It's, like, you're there. You're on the land. Like, everything is, like, it's the amnesiac America, you know? It's amnesiac everywhere to a degree. But, like, it's just that, it seems like that's, like, a big part of what... Because I, you know, obviously I have, Patrick and I discuss this a lot, you know, it's like we'll look into very morbid things and we're looking at patterns in the morbid things. And there's like the fascination with the uncanny or like just the strange and unreconcilable. And there's a whole kind of like clathotic, like suckling or something that's there in the midst of whatever. And like, I have this whole thing where it's like, what am I doing and why am I doing it? And, like, it's all, like, for me, it's all about healing. Like, I can honestly say, like, for psychoanalysis, like, in psychoanalysis, what are you doing? You're picking up stones and you're looking at what's beneath those stones, you know? And if you find weird fucking worms down there that you wish you didn't see, the fact is that they're underneath those stones. So, like, you can put the stone back and pretend like you didn't see it, or you can fucking go and try and take care of the parasite, you know? And so, like, that's, I set the intention that I'm like, and there's no way around this. Like, when it comes to the thing, I have to look at the thing, you know? Like, if I'm going to, I have to go all the way, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And so, yeah, it's good to just be aware of all. Yeah, well, there's so many different ways of relating to any given thing. And so that's why I'm like, you know, I was really bothered with the media and the way that they were relating to things, you know? But, fuck, dude. Like, I mean, that's what they do, and they set up an opposition for us to try and like weed through. And I'm glad the media exists. I wish it wasn't so agenda ridden. I wish it was objective, but good luck with that, you know? Like, I wasn't okay. Fuck it. I'll just tell you what the guy asked where the fucking dumpster was. A guy came up and he asked a fucking family member, you know, pretty much a close friend, where the fucking dumpster was. And I almost punched him in the face. And then I thought about it afterwards, and I was like, you know, I got nothing against him taking pictures of the fucking dumpster. Go ahead. But, like, don't fucking be so insensitive that you can't recognize that people are trying to process a tragedy immediately after it's happened and ask those people. Like, figure out for yourself where the
fucking... Or even figure out, like, exactly. Or to figure out how would you ask that question. You know, is there a way... Is there an appropriate way to say, you know, listen, we understand this is a tragedy, but we want to do our best to report your story as accurately as possible. We don't want to fuck, you know, to like skew this.
Right.
You know, we want to report as accurately as possible. If you're okay with it, would you show me where so I have the accurate.
She was found.
Right.
You could say that so many ways, and then you have to walk up to the people who are mourning the most to ask them. I know there's not very many people around at this place, you know, at that moment. But why are you like? No, it was upsetting. It was just like, you know, and it's just the whole energetic behind it and where it was coming from.
It was
like,
kind of a cocksucker move.
It was a total cocksucker move, and I called the motherfucker out and was just about ready to sock him in the face, even though I'm not one to generally do that kind of behavior. But at the same time, the reason I didn't, even though I was about to, is because I'm looking over and I'm like, that's the last thing we need is violence in the middle of the thing. If it can be avoided, let's avoid it.
Okay, so what you just said right there, that's, so as I'm saying to the fucking inane party guest about, you know, I don't need to go see... the spectacle somewhere else, there's a spectacle under, you know, there's a blood under our feet, all this sort of stuff. And I say about elevating it or transforming it. I said, that seems like a challenge that we really have to face. And then as I say that, I realize I came to fucking Charleston, this like tense fucking place. Let me say something. It's like nothing I've ever experienced. Like,
the racial disparity there is like, I mean, like amazingly evident.
Sure.
Like, no, like I mean, you're saying sure. I've never experienced anything quite
No,
like.
I've never been to the South. My sister lives there. She lives in North Carolina, and I just I've gotten the idea. My brother has talked about it too. I mean, you don't know until you see it, but dude, I've heard some stories. Yeah.
Right. So it's like,
Still.
so you know, there's like of all the people at this wedding, one of the guests is black. Everyone else is white, right? It's, you know, it's like
Look who's
the,
coming to dinner.
right, you know, of the, you know, what's what, I don't know. But I'm just thinking like, so I came to this wedding, I came to Charleston, which is this really tense fucking place. Do I need to add to that? So I get up from my conversation with my murder tour guide, and I walk over to the guy who you know the whole fuck you cocksucker blah 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 thing, and I walk up to him, and I put my hand out and I go, "Hey, I'm sorry." And I decided that my attention that I put into it was a form of sympathetic magic. I mean, one, it was a practical realization in the moment that I don't need to add tension to this moment. I don't need to add tension to this fucking city. But
Right.
also,
There's a
if I.
futility involved too. That guy's just like that.
And I'm just like that,
Right, what are
to
you
be
supposed
honest.
to do?
Right. So it's like the react. But also, my thought was if two guys that are obviously like that, if we can reconcile this, does that help the situation at all? You know, and maybe that's a hubris, but just to say, like, that was the intention I put into it, was like working on multiple levels and say, on a personal level, this is the right thing to do. On a bigger, quasi sympathetic magic level, it's the right thing to do. It just seemed like the right thing to do to say, hey, I was wrong.
Right.
I was fucking wrong. Which is why I love that I got, you know, like, we talked about the synchronized thing. Again, it was like this moment to say, "Hey, I was wrong." It was is actually really therapeutic. It's incredibly fucking therapeutic to be able to say I'm fucking wrong.
Yeah.
So you know, I put my hand out. The guy shakes my hand. We end up, you know, smoking cigarettes together. And his daughter comes over, and his wife, and he introduces me to his wife. And then, you know, it's like my wife comes over trying to figure out what the fuck's going on, and we're all talking, and it was fine, right? Made totally made up, totally understood each other. I said, "Hey, you know, that really wasn't aimed at you." He said, "I understand that wasn't aimed at me specifically." And I, he's like, "You know, I probably should have gotten up anyway." And I'm like, "Nah, I should, you know." I was like, "I just got stuck in traffic for fucking 10 hours and probably taking it out on you." You know, I'm like, just like it wasn't.
Right.
We didn't need to do that, you know. And I'm
Right.
sorry. And I'm
It's
sorry.
that Twilight Zone though, where the guy's got the fucking bomb shelter. And they're making fun of him for it at the beginning. It's like his birthday, and then at the end, you know, it turns out that there's like a fucking bombs are going to be dropped or whatever. Then everyone freaks out and they want into his shelter and they all turn into monsters. And they're like, you know, fuck you. And they like break the door of the shelter or whatever, trying to get in. And then it turns out that it's a false alarm. And then they're all like, oh, sorry. Whoa. And then Rod Serling comes out and he's like, which one is the real them? Is it the one who, you know? The cordial, the nice one, or is it the monster? Which one, like, is the more authentic self, you know? And so it's interesting. It brings up some questions, you
Yeah.
know?
Where
Oh, I don't know what came over me. I'm sorry.
Well, that's, I mean, that's definitely a funny, right? Is that the truer self? But I also thought, even if it is the truer self, it's like you said, it's the right thing to do, and not from the cordial, like, as I said, you know, not to be like the civil party guest that's like, oh yes, you know, what do? You know, let's dance on the fucking bones of slaves. But to be like, but just to be fucking real and to be like, look, I know that wasn't, I really didn't have an issue with you particularly. Right? Like, let's just be fucking real for a minute. So, That's the main point of the story.
Right. It?
But there is one more step. The next day, I wake up and we're about to leave Charleston, and I decide I'm going to take this ritual one step further. So on my phone, I pull up an email to see if I have an address for somebody that I happen to know lives in Charleston. And I drive over to Henrik and Lana's house with the intention of doing the same thing. It's an anticlimactic story. They didn't answer. I knocked. I rang the doorbell. I waited. I sent them an email. I didn't have a phone number. I just sent them an email saying, hey, I'm outside. There's a car in the driveway, but maybe they have more than one car. I don't fucking know.
This is in South Carolina, North Carolina?
South.
South Carolina, okay.
So, to be completely blunt, though, it's going to sound presumptuous, but I almost feel like I know why they weren't home or why they didn't answer or whatever, is because I felt much less sure about that, in the sense that, like, what I wanted to say was like, hey, I still strongly disagree with the stance you've taken. Mm-hmm. But that's not personal. That's like, I strongly disagree with the stance, the ideology that you've aligned with. But I got no beef with you specifically.
I mean, what is your stance, really? I'm sorry if you...
This is the people from Red Ice.
I thought you were... Okay.
No. I basically knocked on the door of Red Ice house.
Wow.
Right? And,
I didn't know that was her name. What is her name? Whatever.
Yeah.
That's not the point. Yeah, anyways. Sorry.
But as I'm thinking about this, as I'm driving over there, I think to myself, so here I am in Charleston, this sort of racial powder keg city, trying to sort of do this thing to sort of, you know, in my own weird way, heal myself and this city in a presumptuous but whatever sort of way. And I was like, is going to make peace with the white supremacist guys that they're gonna fix that? You know, like...
Hey, anything...
Right, no.
Anything you can, yeah.
I know, I'm just saying... Again, I'm just being completely bluntly honest with my emotions. I'm letting my full assholishness show here.
Right, well, say, if you were Sammy Davis Jr. at your door, it would add a whole other level to the deal, but yeah.
Right.
Sammy Davis Jr. showed up at Red Ice's house, then something...
Right, but and you know, it's not that's pretty harsh to say they're white supremacists. But you get what I'm saying. Like, and just in my moment was to say, is this even the right thing to do? As like I felt the guy at the wedding, I felt like it was the appropriate thing because I really, it just if the wedding thing felt right, and the Red Ice thing felt honestly questionable. Like I was like, I think this is the right thing to do. I want to try this, but I don't know if it's quote-unquote right.
Thank you.
enjoyed this episode, there's so much more content waiting for you at thesyncbook.com. Tune in to our other Syncbook radio programs, 42 Minutes, Always Record, The Marty Leeds Mathematical Radio Hour, Synchronize, Pentimental, and Sync Quick News. Our newest episodes are always free, and members get access to our full archive of over 600 hours. You'll find all of this, as well as our books and videos, at thesyncbook.com.